learn just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down our country, man, they're walking on the back side of me. Yeah, walking on the back side of me. Running down a way of life, or fighting and have fought and died to keep. If you don't love it, believe it, let the song that I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country horse, you're walking on the fighting side of me. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Running down a way of life, or fighting in a fought and died to keep. If you don't love it, believe it, let the song that I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on altrighttv.com or whiteresistanceradio.com. You can reach us through through either channel. I have lots more news and views for our people. And of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, I'm looking at a picture up here on the internet, sent to me by Reverend Baker, a longtime correspondent of mine, and I notice here it's. It makes you almost want to laugh, or cry, I don't know. Just want to find it here. It's a picture of two, they look like women. Not too certain about that, but I'm going to say they look like women. And one of them is the mayoress of Chicago, a black, and she's a lesbian, of course. And the other is a female. You've got to see this. It's too much. This short, squat mayor of Chicago, Negress, with sort of like a, not quite a brush cut, but something like that. Beside this mayor of Chicago, who's a black lesbian, is this pug-faced, long, tall, white woman, who is apparently the wife of the mayor of Chicago. And the person who sent this to me said, "We must be politically correct. They do make a striking couple. The short one is the mayor of Chicago. The tall one is the short one's wife, in political correctees." And I comment, "Our enemies must be killing themselves laughing." And I mean particularly the Red Chinese. Can a nation long hold, prevail? Can a nation long hold together when basically it's, in many cases, it's being run by freaks? Now, the lesbian mayor of Chicago has lost complete control of violence in that city. Why? Well, almost all the violence, the gun violence, that every weekend kills a dozen or more, almost always black people, is out of control. Gangs that are out of control, despite the fact the city has all sorts of bans on handguns. Does it affect the criminals? No. And I have argued that when societies become lost, when they can't hold on to the moral, the basics, they begin to fall apart. You see, if you can't get the basics right, you know,
as a black athlete said, and he got fired for it. Yeah, he had been in Eskimo just 2 weekends ago. He said, "Man go with woman, woman go with man." Well, that's not really profound, but it's basic human nature. Almost all religions recognize that. Almost all ethnic groups and races recognize that. This is not a difficult one. The normal course of human relationships is a man and a woman. Now, when you recognize or honor a situation like this of two lesbians, and a mixed race lesbian, need I even mention that? You know, when you're going to go down the road of, dare we say, perversion? Oh, okay. Diversity. It's not enough to just meet up with another woman. Oh, it's got to be a woman of another race. when you cannot get the basics right, and both Canada and the United States have failed that over the last 20 years. Both countries are, well, in Canada, we now have recognized same-sex marriage. The United States, in most states, recognize same-sex marriage. Now, that's not the same thing. Two people of the same gender cannot get together and make some arrangement to live together. Let's say the she character will do the cooking and the housework, and the he character will go out and earn a living and, you know, clean up the yard and things like that. Yeah, two people can agree legally to do anything that's not illegal. But that's not what the issue is. The issue is recognizing that as a marriage. If these two people want to live together and do whatever it is that lesbians do together, I won't say whatever, but that's one thing. But for society to recognize it as a marriage is wrong, is mixed up. And, you know, when you can't get the basics right, are you going to get the more complicated things right? For instance, what is the tremendous hang-up about defending our borders in Canada and the United States from the massive third world invasion? Now, Donald Trump has tried and has had some success. And a few Republicans have tried and have had some success. In Canada, we have had almost no political leaders, with the exception of Maxime Bernier of the People's Party of Canada, a party I strongly supported in the last election, and to some extent Derek Sloan, who's running for the leadership of the Conservative Party. But few politicians have stood up for this basic concept that we must define and defend our borders. This is not radical right-wing ideology. It used to be common sense almost across the political spectrum. But again, when you can't get the basics right, the very basics of sex. When anything goes, then everything goes. And I ended my comment, because I have to be kind of brief because it was on Twitter. I wonder what our enemies, or I should say, our enemies must be killing themselves laughing. And I mean particularly at the Red Chinese. I have no use for the Red Chinese communists. I have, I think they are a dangerous expansionist country. They thrived through espionage, theft of technology, infiltration. But I have no doubt about their seriousness in trying to gain power. Are we going to resist it with a city hall run by a lesbian with its lesbian wife? I mean, really? She can't even control the crime in her own city. Because morally,
these people are lost. Now, I'm not, I don't want to say morally we are lost. That may be too broad.
One of the recurrent themes that I have been pushing the past few years is the importance of bringing to heel the left-wing Silicon Valley near monopolies. I say near, not that they absolutely control the entire market, but pretty close to it. I mean, outfits like Twitter and Facebook and Google and YouTube and the financial enterprise called called PayPal. They should be treated as public utilities. And to his credit, President Trump has talked in that direction of making them more accountable, because he notes, as do we, their proclivity to censorship. They're left wing and they like censorship. Well, I'd like to talk about the latest victim. And this is a story from a very poisonous outlet. This is called the Guardian. Now, they headline the story, Twitter bans white supremacist David Duke after 11 years. Fair journalism asks you to, asks the subject of a story to identify themselves. If you are new on the scene, and you have formed a committee, let's say, in the neighborhood, and I'm a reporter, I come along and say, well, what are you? And you would say, well, we are the South Etobicoke Ratepayers Association. And I would say, well, okay, like, well, what do you do? And you might say, well, we represent the interests of homeowners here. We want to keep this street safe. The park's clean, whatever. It would not be fair for me to say a group of NIMBYs, that's not my neighborhood people, or sorry, not my backyard people, gathered last night, people have the right to self-identify. Well, this is by way of criticizing their headline. Twitter bans white supremacist David Duke. He didn't call himself a white supremacist. Well, why not call him a communist then? This is a smear, and this is editorializing in a news story. Well, then the next paragraph, another sentence, I'll come back to this a bit later. The former Ku Klux Klan Grand Dragon has faced a belated backlash from social media companies. David Duke was banned from Twitter after a final rule violation involving a harmful link. In 1999, the former Ku Klux Klan Grand Wizard, David Duke, predicted that the internet would help give birth to a coming white revolution. The news media did not give him friendly coverage. He wrote on his website, but on the internet, he could reach supporters directly, starting a chain reaction of racial enlightenment. For the next 20 years, Duke, one of the most notorious hate group leaders in the U.S., was given free rein to spread his white supremacist message on the internet platform, on one internet platform after another. And now, after years of protests and a surge of white supremacist terror attacks, where were those? Around the globe. Well, really? Social media companies are belatedly limiting Duke's reach. Twitter said on Friday that it had permanently suspended his account, citing repeated violations of the Twitter rules on hateful conduct. Oh, I see. YouTube banned his account in June. Facebook banned Duke in 2018. The company said more than a year after he participated in the violent white supremacist protests in Charlottesville, Virginia. Well, he was there. The violence was entirely instigated by the Antifa, and the protest did not call itself white supremacist. You see the way the editorializing that goes on in the fake news? Twitter's decision to permanently ban Dr. Duke came more than a decade after Duke created his account in 2009, and more than 8 years after he started posting regularly in 2012. He has tweeted tens of thousands of times, often weighing in on national events and sharing white supremacist and anti-Semitic conspiracies. Really? Which ones? He had more than 50,000 followers at the time his account was permanently suspended. Duke, who was a neo-Nazi at college, did he call himself a neo-Nazi? No, he didn't. Led a Ku Klux Klan group and later founded an organization called the National Association for the Advancement of White People. He was elected to the state legislature in Louisiana in 1989. 2 years later, he ran for governor of Louisiana, and he won more than half of the white vote. Advocacy groups and nonprofits that monitor racist extremists have protested for years against Twitter allowing a decision to allow Duke and other hate group leaders to use their platform for advocacy. The muted efforts of giant social media companies to address racial violence and hate crimes perpetrated via their platforms has had terrible consequences. Henry Fernandez, the senior fellow for anti-hate at the Center for American Progress, he said in a statement citing white nationalist rhetoric being fueled on social media leading to real-world violence, including mass killings in El Paso, Texas, Gilroy, California, and White Church, New Zealand.
Yeah, but did Dr. Duke advocate violence? No. Did he inspire? Did he tell the shooters in El Paso and Gilroy and Christchurch, go out and kill people? No. He's always advocated nonviolence. This is a complete red herring.
Activists with Changed Terms, a coalition of dozens of civil rights groups and other nonprofits, has spent the past 2 years trying to get tech companies to remove white nationalists from their platforms. You see, it's quite clearly political censorship, including asking Twitter directly to remove Duke's account, both in private meetings with Twitter leaders and in public protests, Fernandez said. The final violation of Twitter's rules by Duke's account, the one that prompted his suspension from Twitter, was a, quote, harmful link, the company said. It would not provide more details on the content of the link, but noted its policy on suspending accounts for sharing links to dangerous content had been updated in March. Talk about transparency. Well, that's a great word that people love to toss around these days. That's something they... a real value. They like transparency.
Well, where's the transparency here? What was the link that Dr. Duke shared that was harmful? Well, wouldn't it be nice if we knew so we could draw our own conclusion if it was harmful?
David Duke is just a start, but there are still others. Keegan Hinks of the Southern Poverty Law Center said in a statement. And they're after Richard Spencer. Okay, here's my commentary. Once again, the anti-free speech Silicon Valley censors have accommodated the anti-free speech cancel crowd.
They don't want political discussion. They don't want political debate. They want opponents silenced.
This misleading article from the poisonous Guardian smears Dr. Duke, firstly, as a notorious hate group leader.
He's committed no crime.
Hate group, you always have to remember this, is a term of abuse used by minority censors to censor, to smear white or Christians who stand up for themselves.
Hate group is any organization of people whose views run contrary to those of the cultural Marxists. If you defend white rights, you're a hate group. If you defend the traditional Christian family, you're a hate group. If you're opposed to abortion, you're a hate group. You see, hate has almost nothing to do with the content of your thoughts or your speech or your postings. Hate reflects the anger of those making the accusation of hate.
Okay, the smear identified Dr. David Duke as a former Ku Klux Klan Grand Wizard. That's true.
But two-thirds of a lifetime ago, Dr. Duke is now pushing 70. He left the Klan when he was 23.
That's right.
In fact, a trifle more than two-thirds of a lifetime ago. Now, why is he constantly labeled with something he left when he was little more than a teenager? Why do they not refer to him as Doctor? He's not a medical doctor, he's a PhD in history. Although they do mention his running from the being elected to the Louisiana House of Representatives, why don't they identify him as a former state representative, Dr. David Duke? I'll tell you why. Because these terms, if not outright lying, are misleading, are out of context, and are designed not to give you information, but to direct your feelings. This is true fake news. This is unfortunate, but we will we'll probably see more of this. We are, and let's be very, very clear about this, in a war. We are in a war for our freedom, our basic freedoms. And in this war, our right even to speak on the internet, on internet platforms, is very much under attack. The other side are not just people who kind of don't agree with some of the things we've said. The people who have a different point of view would like to argue a different point of view. That's perfectly all right. They don't want. That's the point. Is they don't want to argue. They don't want to discuss. They don't want to argue. They simply want you shut down. That is the basic point of the cultural Marxists. They want you shut down. They want you silenced. There's a very interesting look at the finances of this Canadian group called WE. Now, WE is the brainchild of two brothers, the Kielbergers, Craig and Mark Kielberger. When Craig was just 12 years old, he formed the beginnings of WE, and this has become a snake pit of interlocking charities in quotation marks, and for profits and not for profits, all controlled by the same two, Craig and Mark Kielberger. That they have really lucked into some amazing funding. last year, according to records, brought in something over $60 million, had a revenue of over $60 million. They also had a they spent a considerable amount of money, as you would imagine, on their charities. And the Kielbergers are the subject of a large report in today's, that's August the 1st, Globe and Mail. And they interview a former employee who came on board because he'd worked in development in Sierra Leone and thought he could pursue could participate in some of these big WE gatherings where students who have raised a certain amount of money for WE get to go to these mass rallies where various superstars and so on, in, well, at least in one in England involving the silly Prince Harry and his equally silly mulatto wife, Meghan Markle, up here. And the young people get quite a thrill out of, you know, seeing these celebrities, some of them more so, more celebrated than others. But anyway, they have a
program to build a school in the third world, and a school in Canada would be challenged to raise the alleged $6,000 necessary to build this school somewhere in the third world. And for every $100 raised, the school is sent a brick. I think it's a cardboard brick. But anyway, they can follow the progress of their fundraising. It's all very well organized. And schools across Canada have participated in this. Because beginning 2 decades ago, it was decided that before a high school student could graduate in Ontario, he had to do 40 hours of community service. And this requirement spread to other provinces. So along comes we, saying students can earn most of the credit they need by going out and hustling for money and helping to build a school in the third world. And those students that successfully raise a certain amount of money get invited to the big wee rally. It's all very, very well organized and high-power fundraising. Well, apparently along the way, according to this fellow who worked for WE, who did work for WE, occasionally teachers would ask, well, you know, what evidence do we have that this money actually goes to the third world? Or at least, how much of it goes? And this fellow said, we didn't have an answer. So he repeatedly pressed the headquarters of WE in Toronto for answers to this. You know, how much of the, like for instance, the $6,000 that allegedly is required to build a school somewhere in the third world. So high school A in Ontario raises the $6,000. Well, does that go to, what school exactly does it go to build? Where is the chain, the connection? Does it in fact build a school in Ecuador, let us say? Well, he said he couldn't get any answers. And finally, he was called in for a stern lecture that he obviously had issues with WE and was dismissed. Okay, that's back in 2007. You might say, well, a lot of water's gone under the charity bridge since then. Well, just this past week, the former chairman of the board of directors for WE, who was pressured by Craig Kielberger to resign, when she asked for financial information. And she's on the board of directors. That's one of the things a director is supposed to do, to be able to monitor the finances. That's what directors do. They make sure that the company or the institution's on the right track, the money is properly spent or effectively spent, and so on. Well, she couldn't get the answers. And when WE, because there's been, the beginning of March was a huge slump in donations, when that occurred, WE let go 400 employees. Well, this member of the board of directors was fairly distressed by this and wanted explanations, and they were not forthcoming. The Kielbergers run as extremely secretive ship. An interesting fact in the analysis of the disclosures or the financial statements of the charity. You see, there's several charities, but there's also for-profits, and the for-profits, because they're private companies, don't have to disclose their finances. But anyway, what we do know, the bulk of the charitable financing goes to Africa. And it would seem last year, with revenue over $60 million, about $28 million all told, was earmarked for projects in the third world. All right. You might think, well, that meant $28 million went overseas to build schools and dig wells, or whatever it is they claim to be doing. But more sophisticated questioners have asked, well, how much of that actually stays in Canada? And the answers are somewhat mysterious. We says it funds other groups to deliver programs. But it doesn't say how much of that money remains in Canada. That you might assume that meant the checks totaling $28 million flew out the door to the third world. But that's not always the way it works. There's administration costs. Now, there's of course reasonable administration costs, but then there are unreasonable administration costs. And we that is the charity, have been very cagey about, well, how much is actually goes overseas, and how much of it is actually used in administration, or as they say, development education. that's propaganda for the unsophisticated. Development education means propaganda right here, back here in Canada, telling people that they ought to give more to the third world. The Globe and Mail report I found very interesting. The Mitawi, which is actually a for-profit, has quite a line. It's trademarked a lot of things, including baby supplies. You wonder, what does that have to do with anything? Power, nutrition bars, necklaces, or jewelry made in the third world. It has a high-end travel agency involving pricey trips to places like Kenya. Now, as a for-profit, it certainly has a right to pursue profit any way it likes, but you wonder, what does this all have to do with this great empire that the Kielbergers are building? It seems to be crumbling around them. Beginning in March, there was a massive fall-off in corporate and individual donations as hard times hit, and companies quite reasonably cut back on sponsorship and so on. But after this latest controversy, maybe at long last, questions will be asked about these charity hustlers. The questions can occur on a number of levels. I have problems, frankly, with the idea of building a school in the third world. I'll tell you why. Who will administer it? How long will it be administered? I mean, it's one thing to throw up a building. But a building has to be staffed. There has to be an acceptable and relevant curriculum. It's not just a matter of slapping up a building. And I believe that third world countries should be responsible for their own education, of educating their own children. I mean, that's what independent governments are supposed to do. I've mentioned before one of the programs that the Kielbergers have going through their WE charity in Kenya, and that is digging wells. Well, I've been to Africa, and I have a fair deal of experience. And I've got to say, I've seldom heard anything so silly.
The Negroes know how to dig wells. And they ought to dig their own wells. I mean, these are independent countries. And Kenya is one of the better off of the African countries. It's probably the second best off after after Botswana and South Africa. Why is it that we're digging wells? Well, I'll tell you. If you don't examine it very closely, it may make sense to a North American. Oh, that's good. I know that we'll dig a well for them, and they'll have clean water, and they'll have better sanitation, and fewer illnesses, and clean water to drink, and water to wash themselves with, and cook with. And yeah, I can see that's a good thing. Yeah, and digging a well is a good thing. But why would we have to do it? They can do it themselves. This is not, you know, high advanced technology that it takes white volunteers. Here's the big laugh. White volunteers coming over from North America to dig a well. Anymore. In fact, this is almost as absurd as if Africa, for heaven's sakes, sent Canada foreign aid. And they sent some earnest young Negro teenagers from Africa over to help us shovel snow in the winter. I think we would look at these young people with a certain amount of amusement. Say, well, gee, you know, we lived with snow ever since the white man came back to North America. We kind of have an idea of how to shovel that stuff, but it's nice of you to want to help, but, you know, it's really not necessary. Or if we were a more cynical nature, we might be laughing at them. Gee, you're saving us a lot of work to see you shivering out there. You recently come in from Africa, shoveling snow for us. That's exactly the feeling I got when the chairman of the CEO of Andrew Peller Estates, a major wine company in Canada, was enthusiasing 2 years ago at the shareholders' annual meeting about he and several other directors and how they had gone over to Africa with we, and they'd have helped dig wells, and they showed us pictures of them beet red sweating out there in the African sun. And I thought, well, which side of me? Oh, I think you mean well. Are you silly bastard? To be honest with God. But it's a very valid question. How much of the money that these idealistic teenagers raise actually goes over there? Very good question. And one that's not actually being answered. And some of the corporate sponsors are beginning to jump ship. The province of Ontario will no longer deal with we. And that's a good thing. The province of Alberta, the education system, will no longer have a contract with we. And they're getting millions and millions of dollars on these contracts. And that's a good thing. And apparently the Globe and Mail had some sort of an intern program with we, and they've ceased that. All that's good news, and this is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me. And I will take my musical break right now, and I'd like to play a tune with Merle Haggard. Has a small role. It's actually a tune by Gretchen Wilson. It's called Politically Unclear.
A trip to the grocery store or a tank of gas. That's a family farm that's been in the family for over 100 years being sold.
They're concerned about the violence and the death.
Seems like I have, you know, less money to spend
another
on
another deadly day in Iraq is 11 U.S. soldiers.
It is a brilliant country.
I'm for the low man on the totem pole. And I'm for the underdog. God bless his soul. Single mom raising her kids. And I'm for the preachers who stay on their knees. And I'm for the sinner who finally believes.
and the world already knows where I stand.
And I'm for the Bible, and I'm for the flag, and I'm for the working man, in no head. I'm just one of many, can't get no respect, politically incorrect.
Nothing wrong with the flag.
Nothing wrong with the working man being no head. We're just some of many, can't get no respect.
None.
Politically incorrect.
Politically incorrect.
That's Gretchen Wilson and Politically Uncorrect. Here's a great medley of, well, you can hardly get any better than Hank Williams, can you? This is Hank Williams Jr., and that's How They Do It in Dixie.
Here we have the latest styles from the Umbria collection. Notice the rich fabrics, the streamlined silhouettes. Each piece is especially tailored and the lines flawless. Perfectly delightful. Next is the collection from a new designer.
I'm not quite sure what this is.
That's how they do it in Dixie.
Electric sliding on a sawdust floor. Long neck chaser for a shot of hardcore whiskey. That's how they do it in Dixie.
Little red G.O. stickers on the window. Says sugar and spice. Baby,
crank the bass off.
Ride it till you say good. Those pink burned eyes.
Oh, ain't that nice?
Down to the river, they go for a dip. Rolling them Levi's off of her hip.
Going big, Kenny, skinny.
That's how they do it in Dixie.
That's how they do it in Dixie.
Cut off jeans and cowboy boots. Long blonde hair and dark brown roots.
Lord,
that's how they do it in Dixie.
Y'all, that's how we do it in Dixie.
Oh,
Now, while we're on the Southern theme, let's take go back to the previous singer, Gretchen Wilson, and this is her Redneck Woman. Wilson and Redneck Woman. Gonna play a couple songs now by Rhonda Vincent. Great singer, great entertainer, being a longtime favorite of mine, and has started off in bluegrass I guess you'd call her sort of bluegrass and country. This is Rhonda Vincent and I'm Not Over You. Rhonda Vincent, I'm Not Over You. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here.
The tears upon my face, and each time chance that you'll come back to me now fades into the past. Can I find a way to let you go somewhere down deep inside by reaching for the healing hands of time?
That's Rhonda Vincent, and I'm Not Over You. Let's have one more song here by Rhonda Vincent, and this is Rhonda along with her brother Darren and her mother Carolyn Vincent.
It's like a chocolate.
Teardrops
place.
Over you.
These tear stains on my
That's Rhonda Vincent and her mother Carolyn and her brother Darren, Teardrops Over You. And this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me.